assuming this intuition, what sort of pattern actually I should explain. This is the second wall here, first wall there. So assuming you do think of electrons as tiny, tiny marbles or tennis balls or something like that, solid objects, and you open up, you have a slit 2 there and a slit 1, so you actually have 2 slits essentially. Again, this is a view looking from above, so we have the wall presented towards. We have this electron gun, essentially very, very hot metal. A filament actually heats off and in a sense boils off. Very loosely speaking, electrons, and they kind of randomly, in some sort of haphazard manner, get fired towards the slit in this case and towards the other slit in the other case. So we've got both that slit and that slit open. There's some distance here. We have this whole array of electron detectors all around. So that's the experimental setup. So given that, what sort of pattern would we actually see in the final, assuming we know this is not true, but play along here, assuming the intuition that electrons are just like tiny, tiny scaled down tennis balls, solid particles. So what I would like you to do is to get your whiteboards out. Do you have your whiteboards? Great. So get them out, talk to the people around you, and then do just a very, very rough qualitative sketch of the sort of pattern. And what I mean actually should explain the pattern. If you actually did this 1,000 times, so you had 1,000 electrons, you would get some distribution of electrons. You'd get some electrons at some point, some at the other. What sort of probability pattern, I guess, plotting a graph of probability. If I could have everyone's attention. Plotting a graph of probability versus x. And x is the distance along this final wall here, d. So what sort of probability? Just a very rough sketch of the probability, like we have a very rough sketch there of probability versus x. So that's all I'm looking for. So I'll give you 2 minutes. Yeah. What would you expect? As a student. So you are not marked for a student. Okay, it's pretty quiet, so it looks like everyone has already got their answers. So if you could hold up your whiteboards. Yep, great. So I see a lot of basically double pumps like this. Patterns like this. Yes, absolutely. And so I think this is what most people would expect. This is what you would get if you the same pattern if you did the experiment with tennis balls. But strangely enough, you get something completely different. And what you actually do see is something that's exactly the same qualitatively as what you get with water waves, the double slit experiment. You see really these vertical lines, basically stripes, sort of a lot of electrons, few electrons, a lot of electrons, few electrons. And there are gaps in the middle. And if you plot the probability versus position, then you do see something that is exactly the same. You do see the hallmark double slit interference pattern. With the, again, this is just a very rough sketch of it, but the central maximum there, the maxima there, and secondary maxima, and also the points in between, actually points where theoretically you actually get zero electrons. And that's something that's it's very, very difficult to explain with the intuition of electrons as little hard spheres. And so this is what you see, And they actually have, we'll actually show a movie now. This is the site for it. But this is actually the group in Japan that's in your notes. And they actually basically, this again, this is sort of from above, and this is what you see, the horizontal view. And we'll actually see essentially this sort of pattern being built up electron by electron, because the strange thing is they actually did the experiment. I should mention, though, I mentioned this, but they actually did it so they kind of turned the flux of electrons down, so they really only had one electron was ever going through the two slits, the double slits, at any single time. So really they did build it up electron by electron. So let's have a look at that now. Just get the volume right.
Appear here and there. These. Now we are looking at the detector plane in the monitor. Bright spots appear here and there. These spots indicate individual electrons.
That's the final
electrons
screen.
Electrons are centered on the occasion. Therefore, the chance of finding one electron in the microscope is very small. Not to mention the chance of finding two. Since electrons are one by one as particles, we have to conclude that each electron must have passed through at random on either side of the bipartite, thus creating a uniform distribution without any interference when accumulated. Under such conditions, do electrons form a uniform distribution? But look, we begin to see some fringes in the particular direction that looks like interference fringes. Since this experiment lasted for more than 30 minutes, I have sped the movie up. Interference fringes are now clearly visible.
Okay. So that was the experiment. So something that had been predicted by quantum mechanics way going back into the 1920s, but to actually do the experiment, to really do the experiment, not just see it for theory, was a very, very impressive thing. So,
sorry, does that take into consideration a single slit interference also? Because when I do it with,
right,
with a laser, you know, I have to kind of draw in through the gaps where the single slit interference is.
What do you mean? You mean you actually you do
laser,
get this
speculum laser,
right?
Are you using a diffraction?
You mean does it have a diffraction pattern overlaid over the top of the interference patterns? Is that what you mean? But I mean that's what they saw.
Yeah.
I mean that's not fake data. That's real data. So, but I mean essentially it's just exactly the same fundamentally as a laser. So you see all the same features.
Yeah, but I get missing bright bands that have to be two.
Yeah. You mean that's the diffraction pattern overlay? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
So they would get that. So it's probably just very, very wide, but yeah. I mean that depends on the details, but yeah, absolutely. So we see, I mean that's a very, very clear indication of the breakdown of the particle model for electrons in this case. So we see they're not like scaled down 20-20 tensors. And just to show you another simulation, one applet that I really like, you can get, actually you don't have, I'll show you, this is a site that I got it from, University of Colorado, their FIT, Physics Education Technologies. Can you read that?
This will be on your disk.
On the disk? Okay, this will be on the resource disk. And they have a whole bunch of fantastic outputs. And I'll just open this. Okay, so it takes a little while. And so this is actually, it's very, very good. Allows you to change a lot of the parameters, such as the slit width, distance between the two slits, also the intensity of the gun. So we'll have to, I think we'll just add some double slits in there. I can change the slit width, separation between the slits. See that? What I might do is also change whether it's photons or electrons. Let's do it with electrons. Change the intensity, or really how electron flux, how many electrons are coming out of the gun. Just move this over. This side here, that's a lot better. How many electrons are coming out of the gun, their speed, velocity, crank that up a bit. Turn the brightness up, turn that on. And what we will see is the electrons, each of the electrons actually. So there's a lot of parameters you can change. You see the individual electrons coming out as kind of a spread out, smeared out wave. And then when they hit, you're going to get this collapse or this compression. Actually, you'll see the little dots appearing on the final wall there. So shall we turn it on? So it's a smeared out electron. And then you see the pattern building up. So very similar, but they show the extra part of what you actually don't see in the lab. So that's excellent simulation. Okay.
Did you notice you put detectors in the slits?
Oh, no, I didn't. Okay, that's for later on.
Yeah.
Okay. And just to really, really reinforce the point that particle model fails, a very clear quantitative example that leads on to exactly what's happening in more detail is, let's assume we just have one slit open. So we just close one of the slits, so slit one is open. And we shoot 1,000 electrons towards wall A, first wall. So back here, just these slits open. Let's say we have a region here, C, this little area here, and we just count up out of those 1,000 electrons, how many hit? So they all pass through, and we might say I have 100 hitting there. So the number's just kind of made up. And then we have another experiment. So we basically close slit 1, open slit 2, and look at the same region C and see what electron flux, how many electrons we get there. We might find, let's say, 400. And so we have these two single experiments. And then if you assume the particle model, what you could do is you could just layer, sort of add one experiment on top of the other. So you could open up both slits, that would be, and then shoot 2,000 electrons through both slits, or fire them towards both slits. And assuming the particle model, you would just get the two layered on top of each other. You get 400 plus 100 gives you 500. You have 500 electrons at every 2,000 hitting there in region C. But in the experiment, so let's say that corresponds very, very crudely there toward one of the minima. So in the experiment, you're going to have a hypothetical experiment. You can actually detect in far fewer electrons than 500. And theory, well, actually, yeah, far fewer than 500. And so what actually you're having there, just as with water waves, you get interference minima, where you actually have two waves or two wave amplitudes coming from either of the two slits, the two sources. Individually, there are wave amplitudes there, but they combine with each other, for example, a crest and a trough, and they destructively interfere, and you get still water. You would get a buoy there, and that would not bob up and down. So actually destructive interference. This is exactly what you get with electrons. So qualitatively, basically it's exactly the same thing. So it's destructive interference. And so strangely enough, you can actually do an experiment with, say, slit 2 open, and you can actually open up a second slit, open up slit 1. So in a sense, you're doubling the number of ways the electrons can actually get through to region C, and you can actually detect less electrons, which is very, very counterintuitive. And I think for a lot of people, that really brings out the fact that you cannot think of electrons as tiny, tiny scale down particles. So it's kind of, if you have this mindset, you have these blinkers on, electrons are particles, then it's very, very strange. But again, in some ways, it's not very strange at all. But if you understand good old classical wave interference with water waves, a double slit experiment, then it's really the same thing. Essentially, it's the same fundamental details, you can understand it. And what you do end up happening is that you have the probability when you have slits 1 and 2 open, that can actually be less than the probability when you have slip one open plus the probability when you have slip two open. And so intuitively, normally if you have sort of one way or one event, one way that could happen, and then another way it can happen, you want to find the probability for both events happening. You just sort of add the two probabilities together, but we can actually have this not being an equal sign here in quantum physics. This can also be greater, and what that corresponds to is constructive interference. And so if we want to, this is probably, we're going to get a little bit more technical. We can do something again, exactly what we might do for water waves. We can actually look at things quantitatively. And let's say we do have both slits open, and we fire 2,000 electrons through towards both slits. And we want to find out, how do we calculate this probability? If you're talking about it, what mathematics do we actually do to calculate this probability of finding an electron at a particular point or at a particular region when we have both slits open? We do the same thing for water waves. What we do is we find the two contributing amplitudes, the amplitude from slit 2, amplitude from slit 1. We add the amplitudes together to get a combined amplitude, and then we square that. In this case, we actually take the modulus of it because it could be a complex number. And then square that overall, and it gives us a measure of the probability of finding the particles in region C. And so essentially, this is what this mathematics is telling us. This is the contribution of the amplitude, really, from slit 1, the amplitude from slit 2. But of course, if we want to get very technical, we can talk about these. I mean, they're functions, and they're kind of a wave-like aspect, so we call them wave functions in quantum mechanics. But that's just a technical term. So this is essentially what we have. And if we look at this, what we can find is that this is what we calculated for the probability when we have slit 1 and slit 2 open. So essentially we're adding up the two amplitudes and then we're squaring those. This is like an A here and an A here, and then squaring the sum to find the intensity for classical waves. And if we just had the probabilities, so to actually find out the intensity or the total probability from the two individual amplitudes, if we just had, say, slit 1 open, what we would do is just get one wave going through one amplitude, and we'd square that amplitude to find out what the probability was, so it would give us that. And if we just had slit 2 open, what we do is we'd just have one amplitude going through, we'd square that to find out the intensity. And essentially we do the same thing, except it's not an intensity, it's sort of like a probability intensity. So this is really the probability here for getting an electron in region C, or any other point when we have slit 1 open, slit 2 open, add those two together, and as we saw before, that can actually be less than what you actually get, or greater than the two cases. And just to put some numbers in, what we might have at some particular point along the wall, so we have to set our value of x, the wave function, or the kind of the probability wave, or probability amplitude wave, for the electron going through slit 1 could be 1 over 5. And at exactly the same point, the probability amplitude or probability wave for the electron going through the second slit at the same point could be minus 1 over 4. And so if we do the math, what we need to do is add those two numbers together. And in a sense, there's some cancellation or some destructive interference. They're like two waves. The analogy would be two water waves that are out of phase from each other by pi, 180 degrees. So you actually get destructive interference. And so that's why we have the minus sign there. And if you do the math, calculate that, you get 1 over 400. So that's the probability that quantum mechanics predicts, adding the two amplitudes and squaring those, for finding actually an electron at one particular point or one region C when you have both slits open. But, yep.
This is like a dumb question, but how do you conserve charge if the two electrons disappear? Like, let's say you have your gun, you can come
right.
And take off.
Yeah.
Right. If you go back to your screen and you have
Well, the interesting thing is for every region where you have a sort of scarcity of electrons, you have them cancelling each other out. You have equal constructive interference. And so you actually have sort of more electrons than what you predict from the normal particle picture. And then, so in some sense, they cancel each other out. So you never ever lose electrons. If you fire 1,000 electrons through, you always count 1,000 electrons on the other side. So charge is conserved.
Okay.
You don't lose
charge.
Yeah. So we have, and if we do the math here, we just calculate this side, we square that, and square that, and you get, you can see there, 41 over 400. Yes?
Maybe this is coming up, maybe I think I've heard this before.
Yep.
This happens even if we slow down to one
yeah.
at a time, right?
Yeah.
Now, with water waves, I can see how...
Yeah.
Intuitively, I would think you'd have to have two electrons, so they interfere with each other.
Yeah.
How do we explain
why
it works with one electron?
Excellent. This is going to be very, very deep stuff. And so the way Dirac talked about it, Paul Dirac, he said each electron is interfering with itself. And so that's a very, very strange idea. In a sense, a natural way to think of it is each electron carries with it its own wave. So this is kind of showing a disanalogy between water waves and electrons. And in a sense, each electron has an individual wave, and that two parts of that interfere with each other. So it's each individual electron interfering with each other. And the one thing they really did, precisely for this reason, do the double slit electron interference experiment with one electron going through at one time.
Is that wave going through both slits at the same time?
Well, there are different ways of looking at it. That's certainly a very, very natural way that a number of people believe in. It depends on which interpretation of quantum mechanics you take and which philosophical position you take. So there are differences of opinions of that, but that's definitely a very, very natural way to think of it. So each individual electron, through its wave-like nature, goes through both slits at the same time. So definitely that's one feasible way you can think about it.
And yep. That doesn't matter how far the slits are away from each other as well?
Well,
if they're hundreds of kilometers away, it would still go through both?
So technically you would, but I mean, so but the pattern, but there would be you. I mean, that would just change the pattern. So if you fundamentally it's no different, but just if you had did a double slit experiment with the laser, you would not, and you had the slits hundreds of kilometers apart, you would not. You would not be able to practically see a pattern because the wave. Just very, 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 very low intensity actually, and energy actually spreads out that far. But technically speaking, the sort of the tails, if you like, there's tiny bits of light, and in this case, tiny bits of electrons, or their wave functions actually spread out everywhere. So in theory, there's no fundamental limit, but practically. Yes?
So the double-slit experiment shows the particle wave nature of electrons.
Yep.
An experiment that we can describe to follow up to show the particle nature of light. Because we have.
Right, okay.
We're starting with waves and doing that kind of
thing.
And then we go to electrons, and electrons can act like a wave.
Right.
Even though we think of them as particles, what's the next experiment?
Is it an experiment that you could do, or an experiment that someone else has?
Show a clip of or
you can do photoelectric,
and that is the photoelectric effect is one that does it.
Yeah, that was strong evidence for the particle-like nature of light, absolutely.
But you could also do the two-slit experiment with light and really, really slow it down. That was done with one photon in the box at a time.
Yeah.
So that's the same ridiculous conclusion.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Essentially, it's the same, and you actually, when you do the double slit experiment in your class and you have shine a laser beam and you get slits, you have billions and billions of photons going through. So the pattern just instantaneously builds up. But if you actually look at it and you can do this, you basically turn the flux down. You actually get built up photon by photon by photon. Right?
So to follow up then, to introduce this concept of particle wave duality, it's best to start with the electron. And I'm trying to picture in the curriculum how fit this in and start with the electrons and because they think of them as particles and then get the idea of waves.
Right.
And then go to that they think of as a wave and say, well, it's kind of like a particle.
Yeah. I think, I generally tend not to be too prescriptive about these type of thing, and I think there could be a number of ways that would work. It would depend on your students, depend on background, depend on what you feel comfortable with. But certainly one way, so one way, I mean, this is one way of doing it. This is really kind of confronting and shocking them with the fact that, hey, you know, this is a real experiment with electrons. But that would be, I mean, that's definitely something that, I mean, that's something, you know, I'm sure people, a lot of people have opinions on, but this is definitely one way of doing this. This is pretty much the way Richard Feynman did this in the Feynman lectures at the start, although he started out with light. But it's a common thing for people to do this way, and there are probably many, many different ways. But I like this way. Yes?
Something totally aside, sound waves from two sources.
Mm-hmm.
Is that similar to same kind of explanation? Is that the full sound energy is not any less, that you just have greater intensity, lesser intensity, greater intensity, probability of intensity?
So
or is it actually you lose energy?
So it depends on the actual experiment, but I think it is the same. So you can actually, I mean, you can do the Doppler split experiment. You can see interference effects with sound waves.
Yeah, like I think so speakers fix frequency in phase, and you get loud, soft, loud, soft.
Yeah. So
you were just saying that the intensity, like you're not losing charge.
Yeah.
That's a great question. You don't lose charge. It's just the probability is higher where you have constructive and lesser where you have
destructive. Yeah. I mean, I think it would be the same thing, because you can, whatever experiment, you can do that one with two speakers, you can just throw a box around the whole experiment, and basically no energy is going in or coming out, if you make the box big enough, and energy is going to be conserved in that box over the whole duration of the experiment, so your energy has to be conserved in that sort of case. Okay, so this is kind of the case. And so really, this is looks maybe a little bit heavy and mathematic, but really, what we can do is we could do exactly the same thing for water waves. I keep coming back to that analogy, but changing the size for A's and having them amplitudes and having deconstructive and constructive interference. And just very briefly, this is, just I'll quickly go, this is a bit more technical, but this is just one example of the general principle you get in quantum physics. That is, if there are two or more ways of detecting a particle at some particular point, and there is no way to distinguish between those two possibilities, that if you just see a particle at the final screen and it hits bam at this point, you can't tell, it doesn't have a sign on it saying it, this I came through slit one or I came through slit two. So in principle, there's just no way in this experiment for you to tell which slit it went through. And so when that's the case, what we do is we actually have to do what we did before. We actually have to add up the amplitudes and then essentially square the amplitudes. Take the modulus, of course, but essentially square the amplitudes. And the sum, the square of the sum gives you the overall probability. So what we saw before was a particular case. And you could, theoretically, you could do the double slit experiment. You could make a triple slit experiment or a four slit experiment, or maybe make it into a diffraction grating. And the way you figure out, in first principles of quantum mechanics, what you actually see is essentially that's the general rule, adding up the amplitudes. But having said that, that's a little bit abstract, so I don't want to get hung up too much on that. So what we might do now is we've come to a little point. So I might finish up there just before the activity, because we don't want to get into the activity. And Dave, are you?
Sure.
Okay. So we're going to shift gears a bit. So what we will be doing, so now we're going on to the arcing components, a bit more practical. We've got some experiments, some hands-on experiments you can do with your students. And tomorrow we'll be continuing on core concepts of quantum theory. So,
no way. Actually, can you show the? Is that thing still there? Can you show them on the way? Oh, you did. That on the FET simulation with quantum mechanics, there's a couple more things you can do with that would address some of what you guys are asking. You can actually choose a single source, and it shoots one electron at a time, and it shows it kind of blurring out, traveling as a wave, and it hits the screen, and then a dot shows up somewhere on the screen.
And the idea is every time the electron goes through, it looks exactly the same, but it shows up at a different place in the screen. So the idea is it hits as an electron, but you can't predict exactly where it's going to hit. But when you add them all up, you get 1,000 electrons hit the screen, and they have this weird distribution pattern that looks a lot like an interference pattern. Okay? And that's one of the things that I would challenge you on as you go through this week is you have to relax this idea of what is a wave, what is a particle. Okay? Waves and particles are models that we use. So when we talk about the wave model, what we're saying is the mathematics that works for waves works for this attribute of light. And particle mathematics that works for particles works for this part of light. Hold on very lightly to the idea that electrons and photons are particles or waves. That's part of what we struggle with quantum mechanics. It's neither. Okay? And so we have to keep that in mind. We had a couple of really good discussions. They're great discussions. We had some really good discussions last week about that, where people couldn't let go of the idea that that's a wave, not a particle. And it's neither. Okay? Now, what I'm going to show you is a simple graph that is in some of the textbooks. It's in the Addison Wesley textbook in grade 11. And it basically purports to let you measure the speed of light using a microwave. So how many people have done this? How many people have tried this? Okay.